In this episode, we're going to be talking about how to bring your marriage from misery to happiness.
Welcome to Thriving Launch with Louise Congdon and Kamala Chambers, the show for heart-centered entrepreneurs who want it all.
5 days a week, we bring you different segments to inspire you to live a life of freedom. We interview the leading experts in the field of business, health, and love. Be sure to check out Training Tuesdays, where we give you a clear action plan to grow your own business. Maybe you can relate to this. When I was a full-time coach, keep repeating the same things to people over and over and over again, and it got to be kind of draining, and I wasn't really enjoying what I was doing anymore. So what I decided to do was record the things that I had to tell clients over and over and over again, and then I packaged those recordings together and sold them as an online course. If you're interested in creating and selling your own online course, head over to thrivinglaunch.com, and I have a free training for you on how to create and make passive income through your own online course.
After 27 years of misery, he finally found it. Larry Belota found happiness with his wife. Now they've been happily married for over 40 years. He's a marriage expert, and we're so happy to have him on the show.
Today's guest was unhappily married for 27 years. Then on the 28th year, he figured out how to save his marriage and completely transform his relationship. He's got some really powerful tips for us about how we can divorce-proof our relationship, how we can change so our whole relationship changes, and what does it take to make a marriage really function. Having worked with a lot of couples, I noticed that many couples get stuck in the same patterns over and over and over again. It's like we're having that same argument constantly. I've created a free video training for you to help you break out of those nasty patterns. Go over to lastingloveconnection.com and get that training and save yourself from repeating those same arguments over and over. Today we're on the show with Larry Belota. Welcome to the show.
Lisa, great to be here.
Larry is a common sense marriage expert. He's been married for over 40 years. He gives really direct advice and powerful insights to marriage. He was unhappily married for 27 years. And then on the 28th year, he discovered some really powerful secrets. I've watched his YouTube channel. That's how I found him. And I'm excited to have him on the show. Larry, welcome.
That's great to be here, Luis.
Yeah, I want to jump right in and I want to ask you, why did you stay married unhappily and, as you put it, in hell for 27 years?
It has to do with programming. Everybody knows about programming. They don't all know much about it, but they know the idea of it. Programming is an instruction, and in those first 10 years, your brain is forming. The synaptic connections are all forming by the billions. And the way it happens, as the brain scientists explain it, is the synaptic connections that are stimulated by the adults who raise you. What's happened is an instruction is put in there, literally an instruction. And this is not like a memory. This is literally an instruction that will stay with you the rest of your life. And so what happens is when you grow up with abuse, abandonment, or neglect, what you have in your brain is a set of instructions that take on a life of their own. And what happens is you end up marrying, and between the age of 35 and 45, right when you're raising your family, this childhood chaos will come for you right in your intimate relationship. There's three relationships on earth: intimate, social, and work. They don't come for the social and the work relationships. They come only for the intimate. And that's what creates divorce, because one person literally collapses morally, spiritually, financially, every other way. And that kills the intimacy. And when the intimacy's dead, the marriage is over. So what creates divorce is the chaos of those first 10 years, the instructions literally in those first 10 years. I've done over 1,000 interviews with people in troubled marriages, and in my body of evidence shows me over and over again that chaos kids, that's what I call them, chaos kids can't stay in a marriage longer than 26 years. That is the absolute maximum, and then they absolutely collapse. And what I'm saying is they literally will fight this instruction system from their childhood. They'll fight it, they'll resist it until they can't resist it anymore. And then that's the end of intimacy. So that's actually what creates divorce. So in my case, I'm a chaos kid, and I've got this real strong woman who's governing me and forcing me to, you know, to not be what I was programmed to be. And my father was a gambler, and my mother was an alcoholic. And so I have lots and lots of neglect and abandonment kind of stuff in my programming. And so she is, you know, trying to control me and make me be what she wants me to be. And that's what made it so painful. But I also had another program because my parents never divorced. So I had the program, you can't divorce. And so I had to stay, and I had to take the punishment. I couldn't get away. But what that pain did is I had to go search for the truth. And this is the true truth, the truth you can apply in your life, not the conceptual truth that's nice to know. I had to know the real truth because I had to get relief emotionally. So that's what drove it all. Marcia drove the pain.
It's so daunting and scary to me as someone, Kamala and I, as a couple who talk to a lot of married couples and marriage experts, and people are always saying that you have to overcome your childhood. You know, there's this massive programming that occurs, and the more abuse that you suffer, the more challenging it is going to be to overcome that abuse. And listening to you and thinking about the audience, I mean, there's a lot of people that listen to this show who are married and have been married for a long time, or have just been in a relationship for a while. And on all ends, all that does for us, and I'm thinking of the listeners, is it sounds scary. It's not, you're not, it doesn't sound pleasant, Larry. Is
yes.
How do you start to address those pains that the chaos kid, that kind of unconscious behavior that is driving you in your relationships? How do you recommend addressing that chaos kid?
What the chaos kid is what I do is I separate the person from that energy that lives inside them. Those instructions have a life of their own. If you think about what the world calls that, they call it that little voice inside your head. So that little voice inside your head is the instructions that they put in there in those first 10 years. So if the instructions are bad, like you're selfish, you're cruel, you're angry, you're mean. These are all instructions. And this energy has a life of its own. And you know, in all these interviews that I did, I heard people say to me over and over again, I looked into her eyes and I didn't see her. I saw someone else. I looked into his eyes and I saw someone else. What that sounds like is possession. And that's the theme that came up over and over again. It's as if he was as she was possessed. And now, that's a fact. It's a possession. That means the person is no longer controlling the body. This entity is controlling the body. And however long that person is controlled, and literally, they can literally go in possession and then out and become themselves, back into being possessed, and then back out and become themselves. And I've heard it over and over again. So it's an absolutely verifiable phenomenon that this is an entity that has the ability to possess a human being. All right, so that's the fact of the matter. You marry somebody, you don't just marry that person, you also marry this entity that possesses them as well. And that entity isn't going to show up until there's a legal marriage. The other thing I've verified is cohabitators don't have this problem. There's something about a legal marriage that will release the monster within. What the cohabitators have is they always have their eye on the back door. They could leave at any time. So because that exit is always there, even if the cohabitators have children together, it still doesn't matter. This monster really comes out in legal marriage. So that's when we're talking about marriage, what marriage does is it brings out the monster from childhood. And when I say the monster, there's, you know, 1,000 ways to screw up a child. And in those 10 years, all you're doing is you're taking your pain that you have from your childhood that you never resolved, you never settled, you never fixed. You marry and you start the family. And between 35 and 45, this thing from your childhood comes for you in the intimate relationship. And it comes for one mission and one mission only, destroy intimacy. That's its purpose. Because what it's doing is it's literally recreating your parents' marriage. Now, none of us want that. None of us want our parents to be our marriage. We don't want that. But this entity is powerful if you know nothing about it. If you know nothing about this energy, you can't do a doggone thing about it. Because remember, in this world, they say it's just you and her. That's all there is. They're just the two of you. There's nobody else in the marriage. That isn't true. And here's the way I explain it. If I'm talking to Dan and Sue, I say, Dan, you're original Dan. You're the good guy. You're a human being. You are yourself. And you got a mind, will, and emotions. You're a complete human being. But you're not alone in the body. There's another entity in there. We'll call him Childhood Dan. And Childhood Dan has all the pain of your first 10 years, every single bit of it. And that Childhood Dan is intelligent. And it can take every piece of pain and literally reinstall it into your nervous system so you literally are possessed in that moment that you're being possessed. And then that's not over yet. So we got original Dan, the good guy, and then we got this Childhood Dan problem. But then we go over to Sue, and we've got original Sue, who you love, and then we got Childhood Sue, who you don't love. So now we don't have two in the marriage, we've got four in the marriage. And that's the reason that phrase, you're just like your mother, right? What that phrase, you're just like your father, that phrase means you are the worst of your mother. You are the worst of your father, and that's why people hate to hear that. So why would you be the worst of your mother, the worst of your father? The reason is because this entity, now mother and father, they're out of the picture. They're obviously not here anymore doing anything to you in your marriage, in your inner relationship. So how could your mother and your father's worst suddenly take you over? Because this entity is intelligent and it's here with a mission. It's going to destroy your intimacy. So that's what's happening in the big picture of marriage. Now, when you take a society and you destroy the governing principles of the family and loyalty and commitment, and you take all that and you throw that away and you say, no, we're not doing loyalty and commitment anymore. What we're doing now is we are going to please ourselves. That's our priority as a society. And we're talking about Western society, which is infecting the whole earth. And so the principle of we are going to get rid of faithfulness and loyalty and commitment. We're going to replace it with please yourself at all costs. And that's going to be our governing principle. Well, go check any time a person is unhappy in a marriage. They tell their friends, family, and coworkers, and what those people all sing out of the same hymnal is divorce the bum, divorce her, because you need to be happy. So the whole world is singing out of this same book. Make yourself happy. And that switch, I actually lived to watch that, because in 1969 was the beginning of the divorce revolution. And so from 1969 all the way till now, and this is 2015, we are seeing the growth, the birth, and the development of complete selfishness. That's what we're seeing in major, major parts of society. And because I talk to people in all cultures around the world, I'm seeing it infect the Indian culture, where the arranged marriage is, the Asian culture, places where this never was. And selfishness is literally going everywhere.
As I'm hearing you talking about this, I'm just kind of struck with this running theme. And I know Kamala has a question, so I'm just going to make a quick comment here. Is there isn't a whole lot of motivation, and I hope that we're leading towards a motivation towards commitment and some of the beauty, because it just sounds so difficult. And it's why right now in our current culture, people are becoming more selfish and the whole marriage institution is dramatically changed. I'm going to switch it over to Kamala because she has some questions.
Yeah, one of the questions that I have is something that you said really struck me, that this inner monster doesn't come out, this chaos kid, this inner entity doesn't come out until people are actually married. And I'm curious to know, from your perspective, why get married then? Why not just be cohabitators for the rest of your lives together?
This has to do with what marriage is. Marriage is a legal system to control and monitor property. Because when you enter marriage, you enter a three-way relationship with the woman or the man and the state. And so if we in the United States or in Canada, the province, etc., you whatever the governing authority is, you enter a relationship with that governing authority when you enter marriage. So it's a taxable event. It's a moral event. So when your relationship goes wrong, you can go to that governing authority and say, I appeal to the court. She and I can't come to agreement. Tell us what we must do. Settle our argument for us. See, once you become legally married, you enter the court system as well if you can't get along. The court system will literally govern your life for you, which is it's an amazing thought when you think about it. If you can't manage your intimate relationship, the governor will come in and do it for you. pretty shocking. So the question of why marry is really a society question. What is the value of the governing authority in our relationship with the governing authority in our intimate life, which is the family, the governing authority around the family? If you look at troubled people and they get married, their chaos enters their children. If enough chaos enters their children, we now have children going out and hurting other children. It's called bullying, a huge phenomenon now. Right? Bullying is being broadcast all over this, the great problem we must solve. But what really is a bully? It is a strong-willed child being governed by the anger of their parents. That's what it is. But the law is not been made so that the law can go and blame parents for the crimes of their children. And that brings me to the next thing. When that bully grows up, they can go to prison. And so society has a system of police, lawyers, and courts and prisons. What is that for? It's for the children of chaos parents. Now, I've worked in prisons, and you know, when I interview prisoners, every single one of them is a chaos kid. Every single one of them I've ever talked to. So what are prisons, courts, police? They are the governors to control our troubled offspring. That's what they're there for. Literally, to protect us from the troubled products of troubled people. And there's no law that says, hey, if two troubled people get married, we're not letting them have children. Why? Well, because they're a burden on our society. They're a burden on all of us. We've got to feed them and clothe them in prisons. We're not going to let them produce children. See, there's no law that says that, is there?
Right.
I'm super curious hearing you talk. Are you anti-marriage?
Not at all. Okay. Not at all. You know what I am? I'm not anti-anything. But if I would be anti-anything, I'd be anti-selfish. Because selfishness is at the core of every problem. And so what I'm really for is I'm for the death of the program system. Selectively, when you can kill off the entity that governs your worst, you know, impulses, you are successful. It's actually called emotional intelligence. And if you read the book by Daniel Goleman titled Emotional Intelligence, you see the definition of what emotional intelligence is. It's the governing of the monster within. That's what it is. And that's really what marriage needs. To have a secure family, you need to govern your worst emotions. You need to govern your worst emotions for raising great kids. You need to govern your worst emotions to have financial success, job success, and everything else. And that's what emotional intelligence is. But where do you get emotional intelligence? You get it from your programmers, the people who put you into those 10 years. So as a society, we need a family system that is strong. And the society needs to endorse and support that. Because all the troubles that we have as a society are coming from only one group, chaos kids.
So emotional intelligence can be learned as adults, and I think that's what a lot of people who are in self-development are working on that, and people who are trying to be in more conscious relationships are working on that. What is your method of, if you have one, of teaching emotional intelligence for adults?
Well, what I do in my course is I identify this entity. And what I describe with this entity, this is an energy being. And the way I describe it is, you, as a human being, are actually an energy being. And we have proof of that because if a surgeon put you on an operating table and cut you open, and he was going to go inside your body to look for what we call you, and he cut open your heart and lungs and brain, calling your name, we know that the surgeon would never find you. And the reason the surgeon couldn't find you in the inside your body where you were supposed you're supposed to be is because you're not in there. You are not a physical being. You are an invisible being living inside a physical machine. And so everybody agrees with that. Oh, yeah, I guess I am. Now, you need to think about it. I'm an invisible being because the surgeon really couldn't find me. So since you're an invisible being, we could say you are an energy being. So you're an energy being that has a mind, will, intellect, memories, etc., and that makes you a complete human being. Well, what is this other program system, this energy from your childhood that is bad, this darkest energy? What is that? It's also an energy being. And what I teach in the course is it's both evil and it's intelligent, and that is a bad combination because this entity can talk to you. It literally talks to you. And it isn't you talking. It isn't you thinking. It's literally you being talked to by an intelligent entity that lives in you and knows you intimately, knows what you want, what you care, what you need for, everything. And that entity has to die. And so that's what the course is about. How do we kill off this thing living in us that was birthed and built by my programmers, who, by the way, never controlled their dark entity that came from their parents.
You know,
these travel through generations.
Having worked with a lot of people who suffer really severe childhood traumas, I can just recall being in sessions. I haven't worked with some of the, you know, I worked with clients who were incredibly poor and barely making it, and I was a social worker teaching relationship courses. So I got a kind of a firsthand at working with some of the people that have had some of the most difficult, traumatic childhoods that most of us can't even imagine. And having sessions with couples where the wife or the husband would start recalling a fight or something that happened in their life. And it was literally like watching an exorcism being happening because I would watch them feeling all these emotions and being aware and then telling me, I had no idea that I had this amount of anger or sadness or I don't know what overtook me. I just ended up throwing something at him and yelled at him. And I don't know who that is. It doesn't feel like it's me.
That's exactly. So you have the exact same experience. You're witnessing it. You're witnessing it. So you know what I'm saying is real. It's a real phenomena. So that what is the problem? The problem is not the person. The person is not the problem. The person is the carrier of the problem. Much like our bodies would carry some kind of infection or some kind of disease. We're a carrier of the problem, but we are not the problem. And so what I do in my course is I separate the person, the good person, and all of their goodness from this problem, this entity. And by separating the person from the entity, what I teach them is you have to have experiences now and learn to see this entity as it really is. Each time you have an experience in this process that we're doing, you're going to see the entity, you're going to see how ugly, how dark, how bad, and you're going to go, oh, so you're the entity, you're evil, I'm good, and we're not the same. And every time you do that in a real experience, in real life, in real time, you separate yourself from that entity. It's like the entity has to step down the stairs and you get to step up a stair. And it keeps going like that with each experience. You step up, the entity steps down. And as that gap widens, you start to see, oh, you're really not me. And I'm really not you. And that is really the beginning of freedom.
So say you're in the midst of an argument and you notice that this other side of you comes out that you just don't recognize and it's kind of like watching a train wreck. You know, it's like if sometimes, you know, if I get really angry or really upset, I don't even recognize, like, where is this coming from? And I've seen my clients go through this. So what do you do to stop it when you recognize that entity, as you call it, comes up?
All right, so here's the, Kamal, that's a good question, because what that question is getting at is, where do you start in the moment you're in? So let's think about this entity. How does it live? It breathes. Okay, we're talking about an energy being here, not a physical being. It breathes. Now, we are occupying a physical body, and we understand what breathing is because it's oxygen and lungs and all that. But this entity, it breathes also. In order to live, it must breathe. So what does it breathe? It breathes an energy called against energy. It has to have against energy in order to survive, in order to live, in order to work. So how does it get against energy? Well, it comes to the owner of the body, which is the human being, and says, hey, Dan, aren't you pretty sick of Sue and her stupid complaining and moaning and griping? Aren't you just sick of that? Aren't you just fed up with it? Now, Dan is listening to this entity talk to him about his wife and say, that's bad. She's bad. She's this. She's that. And so Dan's listening to it, and he goes, yeah, he agreed. And the moment he agrees, he is screwed. Now, why is that? Because the host, Dan, the human being, he has to agree to the observation made by this entity. So when he says, yeah, he's screwed because the entity goes, ah, that's better. Now we're breathing. Now we can come up with more things that are wrong with Sue, and now we can be madder at her and blame her and accuse her. And while we're doing that, why don't we defend you, Dan, because you're a good guy. You did this good and that good, and she's bad and you're good. And now that there's now momentum, what I call evil momentum. All right, so against energy is the problem, because Dan doesn't know about against energy until he learns about this energy. This entity thrives and lives on against energy. So what is the antidote of against energy? Well, it turns out to be another word that starts with A. The word is acceptance. So against energy isn't actually, against is not a word. It turns out it's a whole world, literally a world of against. Once you enter the against world, you are going to be seeing everything through against energy. Every person, every event, a sliced carrot, a bag of garbage, everything is going to be seen through against energy. And you're going to be controlled in every way and see everything through against energy. Now, nothing good is going to go for you. Nothing good is going to happen for you in that world. Now, if you leave against energy, and that's the mission now, you have to leave against and you have to enter the world of acceptance. Now, how do you do that? Well, the simplest way to do that is to list what you're against. So in Dan's case, he says, I am against Sue nagging me all the time. There's an against statement. So then he goes over to the acceptance world and says, I accept that Sue is nagging me all the time. Now, to lock himself into acceptance, he then uses gratitude. And he said, I have gratitude that Sue is nagging me all the time. And he adds, because. Now, this because statement is going to secure this gratitude into a reason. Why do I have acceptance and why do I have gratitude that Sue's nagging all the time? Because the more pain I'm in, the more I learn about myself. All right, so that would be an example of a because statement.
I just want to recap that real quick. You have this against energy filter that is kind of distorting the way that you're viewing the world.
That's good.
It takes mindfulness and awareness and self-awareness to even know that it's there. And once you recognize it's there, you tap into the acceptance of yourself of where you're at right now, where your partner's at right now, you dip into the well of gratitude, and then you find a reason for the gratitude. Am I on the right track there with all of that?
That's exactly it. And literally in that order. And that's how you leave against and enter the world of acceptance. Now, the key to this world of acceptance is that the entity cannot live in acceptance. It dies in acceptance. Its energy literally just disappears. And all of the against energy, once you make the switch, and this of course takes practice. This is not an overnight sensation. It takes practice to make that switch. But once you enter the world of acceptance and gratitude, the entity can't thrive and it can't talk to you anymore. Now, that brings us to the third thing on that right side of the equation. Acceptance, gratitude, and becoming the observer. And this idea of becoming the observer comes directly from quantum physics. In quantum physics, they have the phenomena called the observer effect. And that's where they did this experiment, and they shoot the electron, and they expect it to act like a marble. And when the scientists are looking at it, it behaves like a marble. The electron behaves like a marble. But when they look away, the electron no longer acts like a marble. It literally becomes a cloud of uncertain material, a cloud of uncertainty, a probability, they call it, a probability cloud, right? And so what the observer does is when the observer looks at the subatomic particle, it literally acts the way the observer expects it to. So this third element is called being the only observer. So this entity can be the only observer, or the human can be the only observer. Somebody's got to be the only observer, because whoever makes the observation is the one who's going to create the future. The next day, the next hour, the next week, that's who's going to create the future. So is it going to be this entity who keeps making observations of, she's rotten, she's no good, you hate her, you need to get away, that girl's better than her. You know, all those are observations, and once you're saying yes to those, that's the only observer. So the monster is now the only observer. If you get to this clear on this, it's either going to be the acceptance world or the against world. You got to make a choice, and you got to make that choice every second. So if you choose to live in acceptance and gratitude, the third step is to become the only observer. Now, how do you become the only observer? You stay in your right mind, and Gabal, this is where emotional intelligence actually happens. It happens when you start to observe that you are already emotionally intelligent. For instance, you read the book and you get some tips from the book Emotional Intelligence. And you go, you know, okay, so emotional intelligence, that's self-control. That's the death of this monster. So when the monster's dead, because I'm living in acceptance and gratitude and being the only observer, now all I have to do is stay in this life and start having acceptance for every teeny little thing. And that becomes the key to living this life. You can't just have acceptance when you're under attack. You have to have acceptance when you're driving your car, when you're in the grocery store, when you can't, your shoelace breaks, you know, when you stub your toe. Acceptance has to be happening, and gratitude has to be happening literally in every second of your life. And as long as acceptance and gratitude is happening, you now can have the right to observe into existence literally whatever you want. And that's why I'm living with Marcia today, 40 years later, and I absolutely enjoy her. And she hasn't changed a teeny little bit. In fact, she's stronger willed now than she was even 20 years ago.
You know, it's interesting because one of the things that we talk about in marriage education classes is that 69% of the problems that couples have are perpetual problems, which really means they're problems that won't have solutions. You know, your partner has a tendency to show up late. Your partner has a tendency to say a lot, or has a certain voice when they're happy or annoyed or whatever it is in their personality traits that are really part of that person. But at some point when we've been around somebody for a long time, those things begin to annoy us. I think everybody listening knows that. Maybe you have a best friend if you're not in a relationship, or you have a partner and there's certain little things that annoy about your partner, but you know they're not ever going to change, and you can try and you could try. And what we teach is, instead of trying to change your partner, try to understand that from a different perspective. You know, so it's really taking control, like you're saying, of that little voice in your head and saying, hey, I'm going to turn this and flip it on its head, and I'm going to be the one that creates and empowers this. You know, my partner's sensitive. Yeah. One of the things about Kamala is she's incredibly sensitive. And there are times for me when that sensitivity is really challenging for me. And one of the things that I've been working on lately is what a gift that I'm being given, because I have a propensity towards not having enough sensitivity, and she is a teacher. And I find that the more that I'm saying that to myself and noticing her sensitivity, which sometimes is like very, very sensitive, you know, and I'm learning to really actually love that, because it's making me more gentle. It's making me a better listener, more empathetic. It's rounding me off in so many different ways. And, you know, for anybody that's listening, you might think that I got to this place overnight, but I didn't, because initially this was a very challenging thing for me. And then I started saying, hey, I've got to view this quality in a different way. In what way is it a gift? Maybe in some certain way, I've actually welcomed this into my life so that I could become a better person. And very quickly, I'm noticing a lot of changes. Now, in the external world, sometimes they seem slow. But when I take time to really tune in, I go, wow, wow, normally this is how I would respond, but Kamala just taught me how to respond this way.
Yeah, and Larry, now, I love the piece that you were talking about, which I think is a huge piece of also what Luis is referring to, is this acceptance piece. And I'm a huge teacher of acceptance. And I loved how you said accepting every little thing throughout your day and weaving in gratitude for that. So you are the one in charge and not this wounded self or the inner entity, as you call it.
Yes, that's what those little seconds are, your opportunity to practice. If you're not practicing second by second, you're not ready when real trouble arrives. When the monster comes for you when it's late at night and you're feeling it's coming, starts beating you up with some memories from your childhood, you're not ready because you haven't been practicing acceptance of every little thing, gratitude for every little thing. And so you can see, you know, you're teaching this and you're living this, but people who hear you like, oh, she's just always happy, you know?
Hell no!
You know, and Luis, you're a very positive, upbeat kind of guy. And like, well, he never suffered like I suffered. He doesn't have all the monster that in him that I have. I got a bigger, meaner, nastier monster than he's got, you know? And so we want to compare ourselves to people who give advice, you know, like the two of you that teach. And they compare, they go, why are you so successful? I can't be successful. Well, they've got to have a system. And the beginning of that system is to see that there are two worlds, literally, against and acceptance are worlds. When you live in acceptance, it is a world where people treat you differently, they talk to you differently, different situations happen to you. Everything's different in the world of acceptance. If you're in the world of against, those same people, all of a sudden they're different. They're not like they were in the world of acceptance. They're darker. They're got an edge on them. Things like enter the world of bad luck and misfortune and just all kinds of things. That's the beginning of this life commitment. Which world am I going to live in? The world of acceptance or the world of against?
It's amazing.
And you have to know they really are a world.
It's amazing how you boiled it down, because that's such a great takeaway for our listeners. Are you against? Do you feel the world's against you? Do you feel like you're against the world? Or are you accepting the world, and do you feel like you can gain acceptance from the world? I think that is such a beautiful way that you just encompass everything you said. And do you want to give one last takeaway on how can you gauge whether you're in a state of the against or a state of acceptance?
The acceptance world has a feeling to it. It's light, it's easy, it's warm, it's approachable. That means people are light and easy and approachable. Everything in the world of is light, easy, and approachable. There's no pressure. Nothing is heavy in the world of acceptance. But when the world of against, it's dark, it's edgy, it's nervous, it's pressure. See, that dark, nervous, edgy, pressure world is felt in everything you do. I don't care if you're making a pudding recipe. It's dark, it's edgy, it's nervous, it's pressure.
Right, right. Well, they, you know, in a lot of spirituality teachings, they say it's not what you're doing, it's how you do it. And that,
yes.
And that's really what we're talking about, and applying it to marriage and relationships, and then just reaching out to any other arena of our lives, such as making pudding. And one of the things that I want to get to, Larry, because we're about to wrap up here, I know that you know, you're a busy man, but I do want to ask, because I felt so good listening to you today, and I love your YouTube videos. Can you tell us, how can people find you on YouTube, and what is your website so people can get some more training?
Probably pretty much everything in my world is at youcansavethismarriage.com. It's probably the best place to go. You Can Save This Marriage is a simple site that has, you know, it's got a connection to the blog and articles and videos and all kinds of things. So youcansavethismarriage.com is the best place to look. Also, some people just enter Larry Bellotta in Google, and then they see all the videos and articles and all that.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Larry. It's been really fantastic to have you on the show. You really brought some new light to how to be happy in our lives and how to apply some really fundamental teachings in relationships and anywhere else. Kamala, would you like to close us out?
Thank you so much. You're brilliant. It's been amazing to have you here.
Thank you, Kamala. It's your sensitivity, I could feel it from a distance.
Yeah, it's palpable.
That's going to be Louise's asset then, is yeah. Your sensitivity.
You've been listening to the Thriving Launch podcast. For books and resources related to today's episode, make sure to head over to thrivinglaunch.com. We'll see you there. Be sure to listen to tomorrow's episode where we talk with Jen Chinchero about making money. If you've enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating on iTunes.